This episode is brought to you by Seems Easy Record Sleeve Repair Strips. If you collect used records, you need some Seems Easy strips handy for record sleeve repair. They're super easy to use and repair those seam splits to make them like new.
Ask your record store for Seems Easy or go to SeemsEasy.com.
Seems Easy with two Z's. SeemsEasy.com. And now, on with the show. Hey there, what's up everyone? Welcome to episode 357 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And guess what, peoples? We've got an incredibly creative and wonderful guest this week. Mr. Amon Tobin joins us today to talk all about the vinyl records of his label, No Mark Records, and specifically the new album, A Living Room, which is available to purchase only for a few more days. Amon's label has a pledge system set up through Bandcamp where you pledge to buy a record for a very low introductory price. This one I think is only $25, and they make exactly that number of records and send you one when it's complete. It's a great way to get some fantastic music, keep the price low, and support the artist. The pledge for this record ends on October 21st. The new Amon Tobin record is titled A Living Room, and it's a soundtrack to an art installation from Meow Wolf, The Omega Mark, which you can Google and find out what it's all about. Amon, as you know, is quite an artist. His medium is largely electronic music, but he produces other styles as well through his various aliases like Only Child Tyrant, Two Fingers, Figueroa, and even Shy One. We discuss all of those today. The project on Amon's record label, No Mark Records, tend to be quite collectible, with many records now worth several times the price of their original offer, which is why I encourage people to get into these pledge campaigns early. I'll put the link in this episode page to No Mark Records where you can do that. So I want you all to write this in your calendar because the pledge for this record ends on October 21st. So get in there quick. There are actually some bundles still available for some of the other No Mark records, incredibly enough. So as quickly as you can, get over to amontobin.bandcamp.com and secure your copy of A Living Room on vinyl. Now, I should also let you know what you're hearing today is only part of the conversation Amon and I had. There's an extra 20 minutes available only to Patreon supporters of the Vinyl Guide podcast at patreon.com/vinylguide. Now, I'm sure you know podcasts make pretty much fuck all money. I do this for the love of the music, the art, and the vinyl medium. And you can help keep this show going by sponsoring us at whatever you can afford at patreon.com/vinylguide. And for that, you not only get my eternal gratitude, but you get a lot of extra stuff as well. Extended episodes, high-resolution podcast files, commercial-free interviews, and lots more. Today, all Patreon supporters will get all of those benefits, along with 20 more minutes of our conversation with Amon Tobin. And that can only be had at patreon.com/vinylguide, and thanks in advance for your support. Finally, if you like this interview, check out some of the other guests we've had on the Vinyl Guide podcast, including Cut Chemist, episode 348 of the Vinyl Guide. Lots of crate digging and vinyl talk there, of course. Sendog of Cypress Hill, episode 342. Araldo Bernocchi, episode 315. Amel and the Sniffers, episode 301. Gary Newman, episode 284. Stephen Wilson, episode 261. The first interview we had with Amon Tobin, talking crate digging and vinyl collecting, episode 227 of the Vinyl Guide, and many, many, many more. Subscribe for free to the Vinyl Guide in your podcast app. Scroll, download, listen, and enjoy. Alrighty, with the upfronts done, let's get into our conversation with Amon Tobin on the vinyl of No Mark Records. All right, this week on The Vinyl Guide, we welcome back to the show Mr. Amon Tobin, who's kept himself very busy the last few years with his No Mark Records subscription series on Bandcamp, some releases from the likes of Two Fingers and Figueroa, as well as this new project, this collaboration with Meow Wolf. I believe it's a soundtrack or some soundscapes for an art installation. Did I describe that correctly?
Oh, well, the Meow Wolf thing is, I mean, I think that's been going for years. It's like a kind of walking installation kind of experience thing that they've had going for a while. It's, you know, I guess it's a bit like, you know, when you're at a music festival and you kind of wander off into the enchanted forest area of the and you're sort of bumbling around trying to figure out if it's the mushrooms or if it's the festival. It's a bit like that. That's kind of what it is. And they built a new one in Las Vegas and just invited me to score one of the areas, because it's a large area, large installation, lots of different zones and different people were doing. I mean, I don't know. I know Brian Eno was doing the one next to me, which was really cool because I'm a fan and I love the proximity effect of that and having to blend my sound in key with the sound in his room so that we wouldn't clash. That kind of thing was exciting to me. And so really it was like a sort of a sound augmentation, you know, for the room. And we just released it on vinyl. Yeah, we just decided to put it out. It's been there live for quite a while, but we just decided to release it as a piece of music and titled it A Living Room.
So I do want to talk more about Meow Wolf and this Omega Mart experience. And people can order a vinyl copy of this audio. It's called A Living Room. They can pledge at almondtobin.bandcamp.com. It's only available for order up to, I think, October 21st. So get in quick, and I'll put that link in this episode page. So before we talk about this new project, I just wanted to quickly check in. Last time we caught up, it was very early in the pandemic. And as a person who is very creative and seems to get a lot of inspiration from just being in the world, what was the impact of the pandemic on you and your art?
Oh man, I had a very easy time of it. I was kind of in my element, honestly. I love being in my studio, and if anything, it sort of alleviated some of the kind of guilt of wanting to stay. I found it a good time to concentrate, and I did a lot during the time. You know, I felt terrible for everybody who's having a struggle, and I did struggle financially like everybody else, but it, you know, creatively it really didn't have a bad effect on me at all.
It gave you permission to be the introvert.
Well, yeah, it just meant I didn't have to make an excuse for why I wasn't going to come to your party, really. It was fine. Yeah.
Do you feel that your art has changed or your perspective has changed due to the pandemic?
No, not particularly. I don't know how affected I am by my environment. I'm sure I am, but I don't know how. Do you know what I mean? It's not like I have a good insight into how my mind works. I just kind of experience it. And I do try and just make the best of my situation for better or worse in general. I feel like that's kind of at the core of, you know, if we talk about creativity, I feel like if I had to name a thing or to describe a thing that motivates my own creativity, it's trying to overcome whatever limitations I have in terms of resources, time, tools, you know, whatever it is. I feel like I can define a creative spirit in that, in trying to escape the boundaries that we have. Because, you know, what else do you need, right? If you've got everything and you can do whatever you like, you don't really need to be creative. You can just do whatever you want. But if you're stuck in a box with a piece of string and some marbles, you kind of need to get imaginative. And I feel like that's how I've always approached things.
So when you're creating for, I mean, your music, you know, Only Child Tyrant or Two Fingers, you're in complete control of that. That's your musical output. Your name's going on it. When you do a project like this Meow Wolf Omega Mark project, or even movie soundtracks where you may not be the primary creative stakeholder there, how do you approach those projects differently, or do you?
It's not like I've had a huge amount of experience with those projects, in all honesty. I mean, I've had some quite sort of large scale production things I've been involved in, where there's obviously a lot of different people and a lot of moving parts, and but I've been, I guess the things I've been invited to be part of have normally been things where I've been invited because of what I do, so I've been afforded a lot of flexibility to do what I would do, because that's why they hired me. But I honestly haven't, you know, I don't do a lot of, I mean, you know, work for hire or commissions or things like that in general. Not because, you know, I'm against the idea or anything like that. It's just the way it's panned out. So, I'm not hugely experienced. I mean, and the experiences I've had have been overwhelmingly positive. I mean, I worked with a director making a film, and we just communicated a lot and listened very carefully to each other, and I found like that was enough. With Meow Wolf, it was very much a case of sort of just trying to really understand what the larger project is outside of you, you know, and being sensitive to that. And yeah, same with any sort of like video game stuff, like the Splinter Cell stuff I did way back in the day. It was, again, this is really about, I think you just have to be good at communicating, but even better at listening, I guess.
So what sort of preparation or awareness did you have about Omega Mart when you started to create the music? Did you go visit one of the installations? How do you prepare for something like that?
Well, I was meant to go there while I was writing it, but it was right in the middle of COVID, and so I just couldn't, because it's obviously a big public space. So I had no idea what it was, honestly. It wasn't on my radar at all. But I found out more about it, as you know, after they asked me to do the music. And I did end up visiting it. It was after I'd finished doing it, when things reopened again. I did pay it a visit. But no, I did. I, you know, I'd be lying if I said I had any idea what it was about prior to being involved.
This particular project, was it always envisioned to be put out on vinyl?
No, it wasn't. With the label No Mark, we try and put out as much as we can on vinyl, and normally when there's an album by either myself or one of my aliases, we'll do a vinyl campaign. This just happened to be long enough. It was like a 120-minute long piece. So it was long enough to do a sort of nicely etched, you know, on one side, piece of vinyl for. And so, yeah, it's just something we've been doing for the last 3 years, is really just trying to get as much as we can in physical, in that particular format, out as possible.
I've been getting some of your works on vinyl, Two Fingers and Figueroa, and the vinyl sounds really crisp. I get a lot of records, as you might imagine, a lot of them at varying degrees of quality, just sonic quality. And I actually test my systems with Two Fingers Fight, Fight, Fight.
Oh, really?
So many different frequencies. Yeah, it's just, it really
illustrates the capabilities of a system, that record in particular. What role do you play in this, in the vinyl production of your works?
Well, I should say, first of all, I really want to give credit to Bandcamp, because they really saved our asses when it came to vinyl. The first album that I put out on Nomark, like, you know, when I first started up this label and we were releasing my first record on the label, we didn't know what we were doing, and we went and got the vinyl pressed, got the artwork pressed, you know, did all the things that I traditionally had done, you know, as part of a larger label and with Ninja before, and found out very quickly that it was just a series of Murphy's Law disasters that would happen one after another, and everything was just so prone to hazard, and nothing was quite right. The artwork wasn't quite right. The sound wasn't quite right. The, you know, on the first pressing, I mean, and the delays were terrible, and it was a huge amount of money as well for a tiny label like us to put, you know, forward to get something done. So Bandcamp came along with this model that they do, which is, it's amazing. It's like nothing gets made until they know a certain amount of people have bought it or have pledged for it. And then when that threshold's reached, then the thing goes into manufacture and everybody gets their record. And it just means there's no upfront cost, you know, which is huge for a tiny label. It really is. So, yeah, man, all credit to them. They really made it possible for us to release a good succession of records, which otherwise I'm not sure we'd have been able to do. And, yeah, thankfully we've all the records we've made have got to be produced. And it still takes a long time to get them. I mean, you must know, everybody who collects vinyl knows that what the delays are like these days. And it's become, you know, it's part of it. But, yeah, I mean, as far as the process, my involvement is really, it goes as far as mastering. I obviously mix and produce everything, and then I work very closely with my mastering engineer at Audio Bellies, and he makes them all sound right for the format. You know, we go back and forth a lot with mixes, and he'll fix, you know, phasing issues on the low end for vinyl, etc., that kind of thing, and make sure, you know, needles aren't going to jump around, but he also puts a fresh pair of ears, you know, on my work, which is really useful. When you work by yourself, it's great to have a good engineer have a listen to what you've done and critique it technically. So yeah, that's generally how it goes.
Is that the person that's also cutting the lacquer?
No, we've been really leaving that to Bandcamp, and John, who works with me at Nomark, has a lot of involvement in the relationship between Bandcamp and our label, and he checks, you know, I mean, we all check all the pressings when they come through, but John normally gets landed with that job for the most sort of gearing problems.
And how has the vinyl backlog of the last 12 or 18 months impacted Nomark?
It's been a problem because we haven't been able to get people their records as quickly as we'd like. But people are remarkably understanding. I mean, you tend to sort of operate in a bit of a vacuum sometimes and think, oh my God, everyone must think we're the worst. But then you realize people are ordering vinyl from all over the place, and everyone's having the same issues. So, you know, people are quite forgiving, and they understand that it's a larger issue, really.
So the Music for a Living Room, it's been done for quite some time. I imagine the vinyl's already mastered. The only thing that needs to be completed now is the number of units to order.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so the production and the relationship with Bandcamp is going really well. You've got the Nomark Music Club, which has been going for quite some time now.
Yeah.
I think every month or so you're releasing new music on the No Mark Music Club. Is that right?
Yeah, I kind of, it was a bit of a mad idea because I kind of thought about, I thought about different ways of having the label supported financially. And I realized that obviously there's, you know, there's no real income from Spotify. There's no real income from selling music in general other than vinyl. And even that is nowhere near enough to support, you know, a label and pay everyone's salaries. So the idea was, all right, how can we make something that people would want to subscribe to really keep this all afloat and moving? And I thought about Patreon and I thought about these different things, but I've really always struggled with the kind of, I don't know, hat in hand sort of busker mentality, you know, that the sort of musicians get put into a lot of the time, the sort of, I really struggle with it. So I wanted to do something where I felt that people would kind of be invested in it, and so I made music. Wow, we have over 30 tracks at this point of tracks that you can only get if you're subscribed to this club. And it's a subscription, you know, like any other. You pay and then you get everything that's on the label commercially, everything that we've released in that year. But you also get all of these tracks that I've made only for the club. And so that's ended up being kind of great because it's bittersweet because on the one hand, it's cool because I can really just really experiment and make stuff that I wouldn't release, but it has to be really good as well. But otherwise people won't want it. They won't subscribe because I'm asking them for a lot of money. You know, it's not like, throw away amount. So I really have to make it worth people spending that money on, but at the same time realizing that very few people will ever hear that music because it's only going to get heard by the members of the club. So it's a constant push and pull of like, oh man, I'd love more people to hear this, but I feel a commitment to the people that have signed up and I want them to have this, you know. So it feels like an exchange. We've both made sacrifices. And so far, so good. It's amazing that it's going still as well as it has.
When you look at some of the, I guess, current projects, but with older recordings, like Two Fingers, Stunt Rhythms, do you see a future where some of those will start to be reissued on vinyl?
Well, that's really, if you're talking about Ninja recordings, that's going to be their call. I think they reissued Out From Out Where not so long ago, I think last year. So yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they do other reissues along the line, but it's really out of my hands. The music on Ninja belongs to Ninja.
Okay. I've noticed the Two Fingers, or the releases on No Mark have really gone up in value. I don't know if you're aware of it or even care that much, but like for example, Fight, 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 the vinyl version now goes for around $150 on the secondary market.
Oh, no way. I didn't know they were going up in value.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of it is because of the scarcity and the limited runs. And that's why I encourage people when they see a No Mark record out, pledge before the time runs out. Because after that, once the records are printed and out there, they seem to, you know, really be quite collectible. A lot of people don't know this is happening until after the fact.
Yeah, that's too bad, actually. I feel... Because I'm really not of a mentality to make things scarce, for the sake of scarcity. I actually want as many people to have this music as possible. So it's endlessly frustrating to me that we'll broadcast these releases as wide as we can, and without fail, they'll always sell out, and there'll always be a bunch of people going, well, we had no idea that this was, you know, we just didn't know. And now can we get a copy? Oh, we can't. And I just feel like, I don't know what you have to do. I'm not great at social media, but the label in general is doing its best to put the word out there every time.
Yep.
Hopefully people catch it. Eventually, I think we're going to try and do some compilations, some No Mark compilations on vinyl. And eventually, if we can reissue some stuff, I don't know we'll have to see what that looks like, but there are no plans at the moment.
So let's make sure we get the word out there. AmonTobin.bandcamp.com. Pledge now for this copy of A Living Room. I've also noticed that there's a Figueroa album and an Only Child Tyrant album that you can get a bundle on. So I would encourage folks to consider doing one of those bundles alongside this new A Living Room record. When it comes to playing live, do you feel that at some point you're going to do a return to live shows?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay, grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up.
Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside,
so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new.
Turn a $5 used record into a $50 functioning collectible.
Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with 2 Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits.
When it comes to playing live, do you feel that at some point you're going to do a return to live shows?
I guess I'm just opinionated in general, I guess, and I have strong feelings on this as far as electronic music goes. I kind of take a position that I don't know that electronic music is compatible with live performance, period. I really don't. I feel like we got away with a lot of in-betweening with audio-visual spectacles and even DJing to an extent, although I'd say that's its own thing that isn't really like electronic music necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I've always struggled with it, always. I've never felt comfortable on stage doing something other than playing an instrument, which of course I don't do. I've always felt like there's no reason to be on stage if you're not performing with an instrument. So
even with iSAM?
Well, that was my solution. That was what I thought I needed to do in order to perform the music. I needed to be kind of extract myself from the performance, actually, and put myself inside a giant audiovisual adventure. And that was a very literal kind of a description of how I feel about electronic music performance. I don't think, I mean, it was obviously a really good show. It was very successful and all of that. But I think what made it that way is a little bit like we were talking about earlier with being kind of honest about your position in the world and understanding what you're not and what you are. And I feel like if I jumped on stage and, you know, jumped around the stage, waving my arms around, not really making anything musical happen with my gestures, I think that would have been a very lame show. Whereas if I just accept that I'm the music I'm making is really nothing to do with performance, and therefore sort of embedding myself in something worth watching, I think that that really resonated with people. I think you only saw me like twice very fleetingly throughout the show. I'd pop up for a few seconds and disappear.
If you almost forget you're there. You're in that little box.
That's right. Exactly. That's the whole idea. And so, yeah, I kind of found that workaround for ISAM. Now, I, of course, have a whole other concept for a whole other audiovisual show and all of that, but it costs millions of dollars. And so I've had all of that ready to go, waiting for the right philanthropist to come along. And I need an eccentric philanthropist to basically bankroll this next ISAM, and then we're off to the races.
Okay. So you do have some ideas, you do have some plans. It's about now just facilitating it and how to make that happen.
Oh, I mean, I've had it all ready to go for years. I have the crew, I have the technology, I have the people, everything's mapped out, storyboarded, conceptualized. Unfortunately, it's just a lot of money and we don't have it.
So with your output, you run that through various aliases. I noticed the Meow Wolf is through Amontobin. Let's go through some of the various projects, and I'd be keen to hear an update or what's happening with projects like Two Fingers and Figueroa and Stone Giants.
Yeah, man. So, all right. So I set up this label really as a vehicle to explore these different aliases that I'd been working on for years and years. Like Figueroa was kind of in incubation for about 8 years, and I've been developing this character, developing the music and making its own little universe around it. And the idea is that all of the music I make is a bit like we talked about earlier, kind of a misinterpretation of the world around me. But the output can be very sort of, it can be very different. It can be very beats orientated, or it can be very experimental, like under my own name, or beats being more like Two Fingers. Or very melodic, like Stone Giants, or quite sort of aggressive rock, like Only Child Tyrant, and Figueroa is kind of like an electronic folk record. But what I really want to get across about all of these different aliases is that they all run in parallel to each other. So it's not like, oh, I'm making a hip hop record now. Oh, now I'm making a rock record. Now I'm making a folk. It's not like that at all. These things run concurrently all the time. And what makes them all, what unifies the whole thing is that I'm not genre hopping in the sense of like, oh, I'm going to make a shoegazy record now. It's more like, what would a shoegazy record sound like through an electronic production lens? What would rock sound like through an electronic production lens? What would hip hop sound like through that? What would folk sound like through that? So all these records are 100% electronic. They're all made with the same tools and the same approach and the same aesthetic that I have to make everything I make. But they end up sounding different because they're sort of their seed is different.
So, for example, as you're working in the studio, you have some ideas that would lend themselves heavier to perhaps Figueroa than the other aliases. Do you then, is it like a stockpiling process? You then begin kind of focusing on that, or how do you balance them all over time?
It's a little bit the other way around. So I'll normally have a song idea that's pretty well fleshed out, and then I'll try and make that real. But that song will either be in its sort of genre form already, right? So it'll either be like I might be in the mood to make something sort of devastating with bass that day, and so of course it's going to be a two fingers track. Other times I just feel like writing melody and harmony and exploring vocal harmony, and that'll be a Figueroa track. There's some overlap. Sometimes my aliases collaborate with each other, and I'll get like Stone Giants collaborating with Figueroa or something, and it all gets a bit messy. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, the music sort of writes itself, and I try and categorize it for the sake of just being polite, really, for people who are listening. Otherwise, you know, no one knows what they're going to get. I feel like at the very least I should be considerate enough to put it in some category.
Now, it's clear you mentioned Brian Eno earlier, who I imagine is a bit of a hero of yours. Is there anyone that you would like to collaborate with at some point in the future?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there are lots of people. I mean, there's some young kids coming up who I think are amazing. People like Little Snake and John Casey, who I really like. There are filmmakers that I'd love to work with. I love Conan Moccasin, for example, and you're out in Australia. He's an Australian, I believe. I don't know, man. Mazzy Star. Yeah, I'd love to do Figueroa with Mazzy Star. I actually wrote a song for Kate Bush many, many years ago, and I'd love her to sing that one day. So yeah, there's some disparate ideas out there.
Who are you listening to now?
Right now, I guess, I've been listening, because I've been doing a two fingers set, like a DJ set. So I've been listening to a lot of drum and bass and bass music. And so, yeah, my mixes are laced with, like I said, a lot of John Casey at the moment. I'm blanking. People have actually been lucky enough to collaborate that have been sort of heroes of mine as well. Current Value, for example, a lot of Current Value tracks in there, Noisier, a whole bunch of bass music stuff. Yeah, I don't know. It's a focus thing, so I'll focus on two fingers when I'm making a mix, and that's all I can think about, and then I'll focus on it. You know what I mean? It shifts a little bit.
One thing I wanted to quickly ask you about before you go, the art of the projects that you have, and a lot of it is being done by someone called Shy One.
Right.
They developed some glorious graphics, and they seem to partner very well with your music. Who is Shy One?
Oh, Shy One's another alias. So it's my visuals alias who makes this.
I knew it. Yeah. I knew it.
Yeah. No, thanks for asking. I know it's been this kind of in joke with us for ages that I basically do everything and just put it under different names. But Shy One, yeah, you should check him out. He's got an Instagram, Shy One Art. He's got like 200 followers on Twitter. He's killing it. But yeah, man. I've been doing a lot of the artwork recently for the Nomark releases with AI, photography, Photoshop, Shy One.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I had an inkling, but thank you for confirming it.
Of course.
Okay. I really appreciate you spending the time with us here. I want to remind folks, a living room, is it fair to call it a soundscape, a soundtrack? How would you classify it?
Yeah, it's a soundtrack. It's a soundtrack for an installation. But yeah, I mean, check out, we've got some vinyl. We still have some vinyl from some records because we always press just a few more from every release. So there's like a handful of, I think we've got like 4 Stone Giants left or something. It's ridiculous, like a tiny amount. But yeah, check out the No Mark store or No Mark on Bandcamp or whatever. Or don't, you know.
I'll put this link in the episode page, and I look forward to actually seeing and walking through your music later in the year when I'm in Las Vegas and actually get to see the Omega Mart myself.
All right.
So again, Amit, thank you so much for joining us here, and best of luck, be well, and we look forward to your further creative adventures.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Okay, thank you so much, Amit, for dropping by. I want to remind folks, we've had Amit on the show before, episode 227. If you want to hear his crate digging and vinyl stories, head over there now and enjoy that. And make sure you make some time between now and October 21st to get his new album, A Living Room, that can only be had at amintobin.bandcamp.com. I've got links in this episode page, but you can probably Google it just as fast too. Make sure you get in by October 21st. After that, you won't be able to reserve a copy of this. There's also some bundles up there. I highly encourage people to go down and check out some of those bundles and grab some of that vinyl while it's still available. Again, great music supports a fantastic artist, and it's all good. Quick reminder, too, there's an extra 20 minutes available of this interview only to Patreon supporters of the show. Patreon.com/vinylguide. Head up there now, help support the show, and you get all the extras. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Share them out on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter, do some regramming on Instagram. Show your friends how to get The Vinyl Guide podcast on that podcast app of their smartphone. A lot of people don't know how to do it, so ask your record nerd buddies if they know how to work a podcast app. And if they don't, just show them, get their phone right there in your hand and show them how to subscribe and enjoy the Vinyl Guide podcast. They'll love you for it, and I will too. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram at Vinyl Guide. Until next time, keep spinning.